Proper Sport at 6. The FL 72 on Radio Yorkshire.
Yes, hello and welcome to the 72 on Radio Yorkshire. Sam Bridges and the editor of the72.co.uk, Tom Carnduff, with you for the next 60 minutes talking all things Football League. Coming up tonight, yes, we're still talking about Huddersfield Town, top of the tree going into the international break. What a start for David Wagner's men. We're also talking Football League news from the rest of the 72. Who's going where ahead of the transfer deadline tomorrow? And we're going to be talking all about the Czech a Trade Trophy as well. Yes, the Czech a Trade Trophy. The EFL Trophy, as it was, has taken a new twist, and it all kicks off tonight. Exciting stuff. We'll have good days, bad days as well, and of course your transfer gossip too on the 72.
From the John Smiths to the Keep Mort, the FL 72 on Radio Yorkshire.
Yes, good evening and welcome to the 72 here on Radio Yorkshire. Sam Bridges and Tom Carnduff with you for the next hour. We're going to be talking plenty of football and very apt there from the John Smiths because we're going to kick off our Yorkshire News section tonight with Huddersfield Town. Just to remind you, we will have updates on the cricket as well, where England have hit a world record ODI score of 444. For three. So England in fine form today. We'll catch up with Guy Swindles very shortly about that. We've also got some breaking transfer news, breaking-ish, coming across the Sky Sports news ticker because Hull have signed the Manchester United striker Will Keane on a three-year deal. The FA have also today charged the Manchester City striker Sergio Aguero with violent conduct following an incident against West Ham on Sunday. But back to Yorkshire, Tom. Good evening, by the way.
Good evening. Hello.
Last week, I told you to get your hair cut. You've not done it. And you're also wearing some horrible trainers.
Oh, no, I'm not having anything said about these. Are new. They're brilliant.
Man.
Very nice. Everyone else has said they're nice, but then I come in, see you, and that's it.
First thing you said as well.
Didn't even notice the hair. You went, what are those shoes? I'm not having that.
Anyway,
they're great.
Huddersfield Town, still
yes.
Top of the table. Victory over Wolves at the weekend, and they march on.
They do. Another tough test in Wolves, another one that they've seen off and got 3 points. 3 points from fantastic. Absolutely fantastic for Huddersfield, given you're looking at their opening month, the teams they had, the Villa, Newcastle, people's favourites to go up. You can throw Wolves in there as well. Very difficult games, Barnsley in a local derby. They've got points from it. Enough points to put them at top of the table. Fantastic achievement. And obviously a position they'd love to be in going into the international break. It's just a shame that international break has come. And it's kind of, you know, it's broke up the momentum. But regardless, a great position.
Do you think it will break up that momentum?
I think whenever you're winning games, to then have a week off, it's always going to do damage. But they come back into the international break with a local derby against Leeds. Big game, massive game, always is really for both sides. And obviously you're going to try and recover, get that momentum going against a team who've been out of form as well. So looking at it, for Huddersfield, it's probably the worst time for the international break to come. For Leeds, it's the best time. But, you know, hopefully for them, they'll be able to come back stronger from it and just carry on where and pick up where they left off.
Yeah, we'll get on to Leeds United in a few moments' time. Huddersfield, though, at the weekend, a fine save in the last few minutes from Danny Ward, which prompted a bit of a bizarre reaction from David Wagner running on the pitch at the end. It was almost as if they won the Champions League with that save.
Yeah, but it's what I think it's good.
You
want to see it.
It
means, you know, the managers.
But it's August.
Yeah, but it's about winning every game. But you say it's August, but then we said take Leicester City in the Premier League. Oh, it's only August.
Yeah, but I didn't see Claudio Ranieri.
Oh, it's only September.
Jumping into Kasper Schmeichel's arms. on the 29th of August last year.
Regardless, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It works. It's to keep the momentum going amongst the team. It's the fans want to see it. The fans, you know, all the Huddersfield fans I've spoke to, that they love the passion that he shows. And like I said, take Leicester, take Bournemouth when they got promoted. Oh, it's only August. Oh, it's only September. At what point then does it get, oh, it's only March? You know, it doesn't matter. I just think, regardless of whatever the time of season, to have your manager showing that passion early on, it can only be a good thing.
You think, well, but then what happens then if they come off the back of the international break and all of a sudden they lose three in a row?
I don't think the manager showing that much passion as he does, you know, I don't think that'll really be kind of affect it. Obviously, if they lose games, they lose games. I don't think he'll be running up and jumping and at the goalkeeper, but when they're winning games and when it comes down to something like that, that they've won a game, you want to see your head coach, your manager really appreciate it. I think it's good. I think it is really good for a club like Huddersfield as well.
Now, I'm enjoying Huddersfield at the top of the table. I just think that was a slight, I don't know, I just felt uncomfortable being in August and that kind of reaction from a manager. But the fine form continues. It was a cracking save, by the way, from Danny Ward. Unbelievable save.
Yeah, but exactly. And you can kind of understand the reaction almost, you know. And I just don't know. When will it end? Will the run end? And when teams play as well as they do, get results against the teams predicted to go up as well in Newcastle, Villa. I know it's early days, but they're showing the potential there to be a top six team at least. So, you know, we'll have to wait and see with Huddersfield. But hopefully for them, that they'll be hoping they can keep it up and just carry on for as long as they can.
Yeah, obviously they've done pretty much, you would say, their business, 95%. So far already, yeah. They made a lot of signings in the summer. They're very well prepared coming into the new season. But do you think they will be tempted maybe to do anything else? Or do you think they need a bit of extra strengthening? We'll hear from Huddersfield fan after 7 o'clock on the football phone up. New to Radio Yorkshire tonight, we're going to be chatting to some fans. But do you think that they might need one or two more to sustain?
I think reinforcements will never be a problem. You know, you can never really have a squad too big if they're going to be the right players that you need. And that's worth mentioning about Huddersfield as well, where your Newcastles, your Villas, a lot of teams in the Championship are throwing a lot of money at players. Huddersfield have been recruiting the right players. Not saying that they've been recruiting bad players, because they are very good players for what they want. But they've been recruiting players who are going to work for them, are going to play in the system that they want, and that's exactly how you get a team promoted, having the right players for what you need. But, you know, I don't think it'll be any harm whatsoever for them to add reinforcements in. I just think, you know, do they really need any more first-team players? I don't think they need to go out and spend big, but it's difficult to say, obviously. Be interesting to hear the thoughts of the Huddersfield Town fan after 7.
Yeah, we'll hear from him. We'll talk Leeds United in a couple of moments' time. But as I mentioned at the start of the show, England doing rather well in the cricket today. A world record ODI score, and Guy Swindles has witnessed it.
Yes, I feel a very lucky man to see England score 444 for 3. Typical England, they made us sweat on it. They only needed 6 off the final over. Well, it came to the final ball and they still needed 4. As it was, just Butler creamed the ball through the covers. Job done. He was 90 not out. Owen Morgan, 57 not out. As the records tumbled throughout the afternoon, as well as that world record 444, Alex Hales hit the biggest score ever by an Englishman in 50-over cricket, 171. Butler hit the fastest half-century by an Englishman in ODIs, just 22 deliveries for that 50. And Joe Root, you can't keep him out, can you? He racked up his 5th successive 50 in one-day internationals, equaling the record. We also saw the most boundaries ever in an innings, and it was just magnificent entertainment. You had to feel for Pakistan. They had 2 wickets from no balls, which meant that they didn't count and were just really put to the sword. Somehow they're going to have to break the world record themselves if they're to stay in this Royal London series. Remember, England 2 up with 3 to play. They win this, they win the series.
There we go. Guy Swindles watching England against Pakistan rack up that world record score at Trent Bridge this afternoon. We'll hear from Guy again a little later on in the show. In fact, in the football follow-up in the next hour, we'll catch up with Guy to see how England are progressing. Joe Root in fine form. The Yorkshireman, as you would expect, his fifth 50 in the ODIs. Tom, Leeds United. In fact, we'll just touch on some breaking news. Alfie Mawson, the Barnsley defender, in the last few minutes, it's been announced he has signed for Swansea City in the Premier League. Your immediate reaction to that? Barnsley started off the season to a flyer and have let go one of their better players. But it is one in, one out, because Adam Jackson from Middlesbrough has a direct replacement, has signed a 3-year deal this afternoon as well. But Alfie Mawson going to the Premier League?
A bit of a surprise, to be honest, when you first heard about it. But I think it's kind of been in the pipe work for around a week or so now. So it's good to see that Barnsley were preparing for the departure by finding a suitable replacement and bringing them in before, obviously, Mawson left. It's obviously a big opportunity for him. I think it's difficult for any player to turn down a Premier League opportunity. But it's kind of increasing in fashion. This kind of Premier League's looking to the Championship, the League One. I don't know whether it's the likes of Jamie Vardy that have kind of inspired it, but a big move for him. Should be very interesting to see how he does and if he gets the game time. That's always the big question when players move to Premier League clubs, but I can understand why. I think it's a bit of a difficult opportunity for him to turn down.
Yeah, let's delay the Leeds United chat a few minutes more, keep you out of your misery. let's continue the Barnsley theme and Rotherham, of course. The game at the weekend. Barnsley sitting third in the Championship. Well, it's been a fantastic start to the season, and they're again one of those teams that have kept the momentum going from last year and going up, and you know, showing no fear in the Championship.
Yeah, it was that big what if in terms of Barnsley, if they could keep that momentum going from the second half of the season. It's I think they were all but down pretty much in League One until they turned it around. Heckingbottom doing a fantastic job. And of course, the playoff victory. So that was always the case if they could keep that going. They have. There were a lot of people's favourites. You know, a lot of people were mentioning Barnsley to go down. But the way they were playing football last year, it was difficult to see how there wasn't going to be at least three teams who were going to be, you know, weren't going to perform as well. But of course, fantastic for them. And Championship's a tough division. A lot of these top teams are kind of stalling early on. So if they can get as many points early on as they can and kind of at least just guarantee themselves that safety, I think that's always the aim when you really come up. If they can guarantee that safety early on, anything else on top of that's a bonus. So all these early points are always all going to add up at the end of it.
Yeah, and we know they were an attacking team towards the end of last year. They really free-flowing and really went for it. And it showed again. Derek, our head of news here at Radio Yorkshire, was at the game at the weekend, so a dire first half, really, but Barnsley came out absolutely flying in the second half and again showed their quality that they've got. Four different scorers for Barnsley in the second half on Saturday against Rotherham.
Yeah, they've always got kind of, it's kind of top-heavy, I think, their squad in that terms, but they've added to it very well over some of the likes of Tom Bradshaw going as well, proven that he can score goals at League One level, much like Winnall. Why not sign someone who's, you know, pretty much similar in goal scoring? Put the two together, it can only work out as a good thing. So you can't be overly surprised that they're scoring plenty of goals, particularly against the opposition team that I think are going to struggle this season. You're looking at them, you're not sure how they're going to turn it around, not the biggest budget there. But Barnsley, regardless, happy to get the points against any team. And like I said, a very good league position. Just carry on after the international break.
When you get someone like Adam Hamill, you know, obviously a talented player. Is he one of those that it kind of maybe comes to certain managers that can get the best out of him? And certainly at Barnsley they are.
Yeah, I think that could be the case. And you've got to look at that second half of last season. And you know, it's not difficult to see why he's getting the best out of players. I think players like that as well, when the momentum's going well for the team as a whole, they kind of get surrounded in that fantastic goal in the playoffs as well to get them promoted. And it's no surprise that that's kind of carried on both individually and as a team this season. But, you know, Heckingbottom's had a big part of that, not just for Hamill, but as a team as a whole. And for him to come in the situation that they were in, completely turn it round, it's a fantastic, fantastic job, and it's just shown, you know, what potentially a good manager he can be.
And if you're a Rotherham fan, obviously the back end to last season was fantastic. Neil Warnock put together an unbelievable run to keep them in the division and finish the season safe with two or three games to go. He didn't take the job in the summer. Alan Stubbs has come in, and it's not started well at all for Rotherham.
No, I think like Bradford with Phil Parkinson, Rotherham with Neil Warnock, it was always going to be a tough act to follow whoever came in. Alan Stubbs came in, and you were wondering if he could kind of turn it round. He could get the players playing, much like Warnock when he came in, had a job to do, did his job. There we are. I think be surprised if he did stay on longer than he did. But it was always going to be difficult. And with Rotherham, the past couple of seasons, they've just scraped survival. They've managed to keep themselves up. I don't know whether it's a case of like a Wigan, like Wolves when they went down. Is Rotherham going down this season and potentially rebuilding, coming back stronger, going to benefit them? I think so. I know it's early days, but I can't see Rotherham turning it round based on the performances they're putting so far. And I know it is August, but it's early indications, and they're not great indications at all.
And it was a very angry Alan Stubbs who spoke to Derek Clark after that 4-0 defeat at the weekend. Here's what he had to say.
What is disappointed at Alan?
Yeah. Especially when you're in the game, you know, for the period that we were, you know, up until, you know, 50, 55 minutes. And then, you know, I thought we were, if anything, just shaded it in terms of, you know, the team that looking likely to score. And then after that, you know, we've conceded from a cross, and then, you know, the ball's broke to him. And then the second one, you know, there's not an awful lot you can do with a deflection. If anything, stop the shot in the first place. But after that, you know, it was disappointing.
The goal, the first goal was scrappy. The second goal, obviously, like you say, disappointing. You're disappointed at the sort of first reaction after that.
Well, I think that's what, you know, that's what Barnsley do, though. You know, they put lots of crosses in the box. They try and make it a fight, you know, and then they play off second ball. And they do it well. You know, we knew that that's what they were going to do. But we just, you know, we need to deal better with that. You know, ultimately, you know, you need to stop crosses. And if you stop crosses, then you take away, you know, one of the strengths.
Did you take any positives from the afternoon at all?
When you look at the game, you know, probably not. You know, which is disappointing, because, you know, you go in at half time and just after that, and you think, you know, we've got a real chance of winning this game. But then after that, you know, to lose 4-0, you know, if you look at the whole game, to lose 4-0, you know, I think it's, you know, it's very harsh on us. But when you concede goals like that, you know, then you only have yourself to blame.
There we go. That's Alan Stubbs, the Rotherham boss, talking to Derek Clark after that defeat at the weekend. And he talks about conceding goals there, Tom. They've conceded a lot of goals so far this season already. 2-2 against Wolves. They lost 5-4 to Morecambe in the EFL Cup. 3-0 to Aston Villa. 3-0 to Brighton. They got a win on the board against Brentford. And then 4-0 at the weekend. So you do the maths on that. But
it's a lot. There's your maths.
They've shipped a lot of goals. And he's talked about getting a few out of the club. And potentially maybe some of the signings he's brought in as well. He seems determined to make changes, but he's not got that long to do it.
I think with Rotherham, of course, the attacking quality within the Championship now, where the average price for a Championship striker now seems to be between 10 and 15 million if you're going to get a proven goal scorer. And with Rotherham's defence, it's not strong enough. It's just not strong enough for this league at the moment. And that's why I said a moment ago about you can't see them turning it around. You can't see that how they're going to keep teams out, how they're going to knock those scores down, regardless of it being over 120 minutes. If you concede in 5 to Morecambe, there's an issue there. There's an issue, cup or not. There's obviously an issue, whether it's your first team, whether it's your squad, etc., etc. I think unless there's going to be major changes, and the fact is we're now, what, about 27-something hours away from the end of the transfer window, it's just too late. It's just too late, and you just can't see. Well, I personally just can't see him turning around whatsoever.
There we go. A bleak report for Rotherham from Tom. But of course, Rotherham on 4 points in 22nd place in the Championship. Just above them in 21st. Also on 4 points is Leeds United. Are Leeds United doomed then, or is it just a bad? It's just a bad start for Leeds. Can Gary Monk recover?
I think taking out the whole Leeds United allegiance that I've got, I think you compare Leeds, you compare Rotherham, you compare the squads, you compare the managers, the management team, etc. You could see Leeds turning it round. Not saying they're going to go on and win the league, but you can see them getting out of the position compared to Rotherham, where you can't. Of course, Leeds massively disappointing, 4 points in the opening month, but you know, you hope it's given time to turn it round. It's always going to be a difficult job to take, and it's always going to be a difficult opening month. But you know, we spoke about the international break for Huddersfield Town. I think it's come at a great time for Leeds going into a game against Huddersfield. They can have that week to recover, maybe look at the transfer market if they need to. Of course, we're running out of time, but you know, the international break is going to be massive for Leeds just to recover, get the players together, get kind of everyone going in the right direction once again, going into a game against top of the table and a local derby. So I think the international break is going to be massive for Leeds in terms of turning it around.
Yeah, of course, Leeds beaten by Nottingham Forest at the weekend. What did you make of the goals conceded by Leeds?
Disappointing. Again? Disappointing again. I think it's a lot of... It seems to be pretty much all the goals Leeds score are pretty poor defending, bar maybe Carney's goal for Fulham the other week. But you're watching them and they're poor goals to give away. Very poor goals to give away. It's easily preventable. And a team like Forest, as a club, as a team, they're in pretty similar situations to Leeds, I think. And that was one where, you know, you could look at it and go, OK, that's very winnable, considering we got the result against Sheffield Wednesday. So to go and get, you know, a loss against Forest, always disappointing. But like I said, the international break's come now at a great time for Gary Monk, for his coaching staff, for the players, get everyone together, get working on new ideas potentially, because that could be what it's needed. And you know, the lone players, the likes of Janssen, give them some time to train, to get used to playing with the rest of their teammates. And you know, the players like that with the experience could be the ones who can help turn around what is poor defence at the moment.
Time definitely what is needed. Is that, what's that, a 5 minute warning you're pointing to me at? Barnsley, another signing due then in 5 minutes time.
Well, you guess so from the hint there, so we'll have to keep our eye on this.
Cryptic from Barnsley, who potentially they've of course let one player go. They've signed one today as well. Alfie Mawson going to Swansea. Adam Jackson coming in from Middlesbrough. Potentially another signing there. It's always one of them, isn't it, where they tweet something out and it turns out to be a ticket deal. Fifth kit is revealed.
Oh no!
With the Alfie Mawson money.
I think that clubs have got to learn their lesson. The whole Leeds United deadline day fiasco of don't go to bed just yet. I think that's a warning for all other clubs. Be careful what cryptic tweets you put out.
So, for Leeds United tomorrow, then, will you be going to bed early? Do you think the business is pretty much done? That the club are still working, we believe, to bring in players, but do you think they will be able to get more over the line?
Of course, it's difficult to say. I fully expect Leeds, and by the sounds of it, Leeds are working on deals. Of course, there are positions that do need strengthening. I think Leeds have made some good signings. Can't complain about some of the signings that have been made this summer, but the fact was Leeds just needed to make a lot. The squad wasn't there. A good squad wasn't there for a serious top six push, as the club kind of indicated over the summer. You need a big squad to do that, and Leeds just don't have it. So it's going to be difficult. Of course, yeah, I'd expect maybe, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if one or two came in. There's obviously been talk of players coming, but it's gone a bit quiet in terms of the names being linked. And I don't think Gary Monk would completely shut off the idea of transfers of players coming in. So I think as any football fan, you want to see your club do deals on deadline day for the excitement. But I wouldn't be overly surprised if that maybe is it for Leeds. Maybe working on one or two deals, but they don't come to anything.
We shall see. We'll get to the Barnsley signing. We've got two more minutes.
Two more minutes.
In fact, we've got, in the length of this interview with Gary Monk, we should maybe find out the next Barnsley signing. Here it is. This is Gary Monk speaking to Radio Yorkshire's Mark Wilson after defeat to Forest at the weekend.
A tough day for you today. What are your thoughts?
No, a frustrating day, for sure. We were the architects of our own downfall today. We thought we were progressing on the set pieces, which we had in the last few games. You can see the progress we made, and then we slipped back into that lack of concentration and made individual errors and made it hard for ourselves. Even at 1-0, no. First half, I didn't think there was much in the game, even though we were in second gear. We weren't out. I think we played within ourselves in that first half. But second half, I think there was only one team trying to get the result. You could see they were wasting time from kickoff. 46 minutes, I remember the keeper taking 30, 40 seconds to take a kick. So you have to sense that quicker. We have to sense that quicker as a team. And I felt we had the chances. We had the momentum with us. We were on the front foot. We have to be more clinical when we get that front foot or that real positive passage of play. And not cost ourselves with sloppy lack of concentration on the goals. And that's frustrating today because, for me, in that second half, Forest were there for the taking. They'd settled for the 1-0 and they looked worried about the 1-0 and we were on the front foot. But we were the architects of our own downfall today. I think had we cut out those individual areas and we concentrated better in those situations, we would have got a result for sure today. But obviously it wasn't to be.
What do you do to rectify those individual errors? Do you change the individuals or do you work with them?
No, we work hard. We have an international break now. Something I haven't been able to do with the group up to this point is spend a lot of hours on the training field with such a busy schedule. I get 2 weeks now to really drill home and really work on the things that we need to improve on and the plan that we have. So no, that'll be my focus for these next 2 weeks. We have to progress the team and have to work hard as a group, and because you can see the talent we have, you can see the team, the potential that we've got as a team. It's just that the players need to see it. They need to focus on it and concentrate in those crucial moments to give themselves the best chance. And how we do that, like we did in the last couple of games, you can see what we can do. And even today in that second half, how we concentrated that better in those set pieces, we would have probably won that game today. But we have to improve on that.
There we go. That's Gary Monk, the Leeds United boss, after that defeat at the weekend. Still waiting on that Barnsley signing. 5 minutes. 5 minutes has come. 5 minutes has come. It's up.
It's 5 minutes. Come We're on, just man. Staring at the screen. Come on.
Yeah.
Get on with it. Get on with it.
Exciting. We believe, or some people believe, it is Adam Armstrong, the Newcastle striker. A lot of Coventry last year. Scored a hatful for Coventry. 20
scored
goals.
A very lot of goals.
It'll be interesting to see how he does in the Championship. Adam, there we go. Breaking news. Adam Armstrong as Tom.
Sorry. There we
blocks
are.
The screen.
Adam Armstrong. Very good signing. We were speaking about their attacking quality a couple of minutes ago. What an addition to make to the squad. Great signing.
And he was linked with Rotherham a little earlier on. So maybe the one there Rotherham have missed out on. So there'll be some frustration there from Alan Stubbs.
I can't see Rotherham ever really going for him. I just couldn't have seen. I think with competition, a lot of Championship clubs would have been interested in him. I would have been very surprised if he did end up at Rotherham. I think when you can go to the likes of Barnsley, who
so what's
are
the
on
difference
the way
between
up?
Barnsley and
Rotherham?
Barnsley and Rotherham, apart Rotherham from a good start. Deal breaker?
The team. You're looking at the team, the way the clubs are going. Barnsley are a club on the up, frankly, and we spoke about Rotherham. They're at the bottom end of the Championship, whereas Barnsley, it's a new adventure for them, really, going back into the Championship, much stronger than the last time they were in. You know, there could be a link between Heckingbottom and Armstrong, you never know. But I think that's it. I think just Barnsley seem to be a club compared to Rotherham, who you'd probably think, oh, yeah, in the short term anyway, going places. So, you know, I can see why, if Rotherham realistically in for him, why you'd pick Barnsley over him.
Just very quickly, on Bradford City, now second in League One after their result at the weekend. Phil Parkinson's new side, Bolton, just ahead of them still. They dropped points, but still remain unbeaten, Bolton. But Bradford City, it's been a really solid start. They'll be more than happy with that.
Oh, definitely, yeah, of course. Like I said before, it's always going to be a tough act to follow Phil Parkinson, whoever came in, but Stuart McCall's done a great job there, but they've been getting the results. And of course, after the playoff disappointment of last year, they'll really be hoping for promotion this year. And we said it all night, really. I know it's early days, but, you know, it's positive and it's something you want to see early on, your team at the top end of the table.
Yeah, Danny Parkinson, our resident Bradford fan, still hoping for a striker through the door.
Yeah, I can understand why, you know. I think teams have shown the power of having a good striker. Bradford last season, when compared to the playoff teams around him, didn't really have the goals when you compared them to Millwall with Morrison and Gregory, Barnsley with Winall. You can understand why, you know, an additional striker would help that. And at the end of the day, goals win you games and that'll end up in promotion. So I can totally agree why Danny's crying out for a new striker.
Mm, there you go. Goals win your games. Incisive punditry from Tom Carnduff. We'll have more of that after this short break here on The 72.
Football chat and much more. The FL 72 on Radio Yorkshire.
Hi, this is Darren Harper from Good Morning Yorkshire on Radio Yorkshire. Well, my favourite Leeds United game has to be Bristol Rovers, way back in 2010. I think because it just had everything. Leeds United's Max Gradle getting sent off, fighting for promotion, getting out of League One after being in there for 3 years. It was spectacular in the end, and the way the crowd just went absolutely mental when Beckford got the winner, it was superb. That would be my favourite. Plus, it's the only game I know that has brought Tom Kerwin to tears.
Hello, this is Danny Parkinson from Radio Yorkshire's daytime show. My favourite game ever was Chelsea 2, Bradford City 4. One of the greatest comebacks of all time. Never mind the cup, never mind the... One of the greatest comebacks ever. The lads from Bradford went to one of the richest clubs in the world and beat them with pure Football League football on their own turf. Nothing better.
Hey, this is Andy Lawson from Afternoons. As a Huddersfield Town fan, I could say my favourite game was when we beat Leeds United 4-1 at Elland Road. Maybe the start of this season when we beat Newcastle 2-1. But no, I'm going for the playoff final against Sheffield United. Any game that takes you to that many penalties that you win is always something momentous, and to get promoted after it, that has to be my favourite game.
The FL 72 on Radio Yorkshire.
Yes, welcome back. We've got about 25 minutes or so before a new show starts here on Radio Yorkshire. Sam and Tom are remaining with you, and well, we've got the football phone. What are you looking at?
Looking at Twitter. Okay. Just looking at Curtis Woodhouse. He followed us. Maybe he's a big fan of the show.
We'll get him on. He's a friend of the show.
Other
shows.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. Yeah, fine.
All right. Rudely interrupting. We shall crack on. Still got loads to get through. We're going to have a bit of a chat about the Checker Trade Trophy. Yes, you heard that right. Not the EFL Trophy. So the latest twist in that terrible competition continues. Good days, bad days as well. We've got some transfer rumours too. But let's touch on the rest of the 72 and the news of the week, Tom. And quite a few deals going through elsewhere. Some big deals, but one falling through. Cheick Tiote's deal to Galatasaray is no more. And Asamoah Gyan as well, that deal's fallen through.
Yeah, on his way to Reading, yeah. But I think it just fascinates me with Newcastle being in the Championship now. We're talking about players such as Cheick Tiote going to clubs the size of Galatasaray, and these deals are falling through. But, you know, it's not just the size of it. But for them, it's going to be disappointing because, of course, they've spent a lot this summer. They're still looking to ship players out. And I think Cheick Tiote is kind of on that kind of on the fringes of the squad. So, of course, disappointment, really, I think, for probably player and for the club. But, you know, still time to go. We said this earlier, still time to go. So maybe a move elsewhere might come up.
Yeah, plenty of twists and turns to go. Yeah, I think it's going to be a real exciting end to the transfer window for many, many clubs. Norwich City have done a bit of business. Nelson Oliveira coming in from Benfica.
Yeah, he has. Yeah, he was on loan at Nottingham Forest last season. Very good player. Norwich City adding to their very strong squad already, and to get him on a permanent deal as well kind of signals, I think, their intent a bit. Not just that they're spending money for the sake of it, but they're bringing the players in who they want to be there. 4-year deal as well, obviously looking towards the future. So I think a player with the status of the club he's come from, but with experience in this league, is going to be massive. So for me, that's a very good signing.
Yeah, Aston Villa today have, done a real good bit of business, signing from Bristol City.
Yeah, of course, Jonathan Kjaer has made the move there. £15 million, though. That is a lot of money for a striker who, you know, didn't score as many goals as Huddersfield's Naki Wells last season. And I think it's... This seems to me like Aston Villa have the money, so they're going to spend it. I think if he gets them into the Premier League, you know, I don't think many people will kind of bat an eyelid about it. But that is a lot of money for a player when you consider how much they spent on Ross McCormack, who season after season has proven he's a top championship goalscorer. So very surprised. And I think it is just a case of spending the money because they've got it.
Well, yeah, indeed. And last year, well, when you consider... How many goals did Andre Gray get last year for Burnley? 24?
Yeah, it was around goals? That, wasn't it? Yeah.
And he cost, what?
Seven?
About that, yeah. Million, it was rising to nine, wasn't it? Yeah. So probably nine in total after promotion to the Premier League. But that does just show again that the extra knock-on in the market this year, there's so much money knocking around. It's unbelievable. £15 million.
I think it's that, and combined with if they did this deal 2 weeks ago, I think it would have cost maybe 9-10. I think it would have been that, but I think it's come so late, and it seems to be by reports suggesting that they were after the likes of, I think Naki Wells was on their list as well, Abel Hernandez. Maybe those deals haven't come about, so they've gone to Bristol City, kind of panicked a bit, thinking, well, we do need to get this striker in. We haven't got long left. We've got the money, throw it at them. And like I said, if it was 2 weeks ago, it wouldn't have been as big as it was. I think it maybe could have well have been about 5 million or so less.
Yeah, what do you make of this, the Nottingham Forest situation with Oliver Burke going to Leipzig? And there's been the real fallout over it, and potentially harming the investment there, and the manager not knowing that the player was going to go. It all seems a little murky.
Yeah, it's a bit of a... It kind of raised an eyebrow for me, really, in terms of... I think it was just you don't associate championship players with going to the Bundesliga for that amount of money as well. And obviously, there's been a big kind of a big backlash from the Forest fans who understandably weren't happy with the sale. There's a lot of money there. And of course, it's great saying, well, 13 million, that's a lot of money for a player. But are Forest going to reinvest it? And this late into the window, if they want to, are they going to have the time to reinvest it? So understandably, a very annoyed response from the Forest fans, and I just can't see that amount of money being invested purely because of the time we've got left in the transfer window.
Indeed, we shall move on because we've still got plenty to get through on the show before the football phone up at 7 o'clock. In fact, we'll play you into the next part of the show. We'll hear from the new Aston Villa man. He's cost £15 million. Here's Jonathan Kadia talking about his big money move.
Jonathan, a very big welcome to Aston Villa. How pleased are you to be here?
Thank you. Yes, I'm happy to come for Aston Villa because Aston Villa is a very good club and is a good moment for me.
And why did you decide to join the club?
Because Aston Villa is a good club and a historic club because last season he played for Premier League. It's important for me, for my progression, because I need every year's progress for my football.
From the John Smiths to the Keep Mort, the FL72 on Radio Yorkshire.
I'm hugely excited because on a Saturday morning here on Radio Yorkshire, it's Martin Calder's PMT. And when I say PMT, of course, I mean pre-match tension. Saturday morning, the build-up to the match, it's that mix of hope, optimism. You think, well, this is the time they're going to get it right. I mean, you know you're going to be disappointed in the end. Most times you'll be disappointed. Yeah, 4 out of 5 times you'll be bitterly disappointed. However, it's the hope, isn't it? Well, we're going to help that process along on a Saturday morning. Every Saturday, 10 a.m. here on Radio Yorkshire, it's Martin Kellner's PMT.
From Wednesday to United, the FL72 on Radio Yorkshire.
Make sure you check out the Martin Kellner podcast. You can get that on iTunes. Just search for Martin Kellner podcast or at our Audio Boom channel as well, audioboom.com/Radio Yorkshire. Well worth a listen. Tom, now we can move on to talk about the Czech Trade Trophy. And, well, everyone's favourite football competition. It's taken a bit more of a twist. Just explain the whole checker trade thing and what's kind of been happening on social media.
Yeah, there's been a lot of hammering, I think it's fair to say, of the checker trade brand for obviously sponsoring the trophy.
Why? Just because it's...
Because I think a lot of the changes, the inclusions of the B teams, the under-23 teams... And you can understand the frustration, etc., etc. And of course, for those League One and League Two clubs, it's kind of like introducing these teams. It's seen as kind of devaluing both the competition, their clubs as well, thinking that they're suitable to be on the same level as Premier League youth teams. So, of course, there's been a big backlash to this as ever since, you know, the plans and the proposals came out months ago for this competition. We're obviously on the day, we're about 15 minutes away from the first kickoffs tonight, and it's obviously, you know, the people who have opposed it have been very vocal today on its kind of kickoff day.
Yeah, it's not been great, but Checker Trade themselves, they've taken a bit of stick, but they've been responding to it and getting stuck into some fans.
Yeah, they've. I think there was one questioning, well, why don't you support your team? Something around those lines. And understandably, there was a bit of a backlash to that. But I think it's a case of, you know, people said such and such as the Johnson's Paint Trophy as it was. But I think with these changes, with the introductions of the under-23s teams, people aren't getting behind it. In fact, we ran a poll on the FBL, at FBL72 on Twitter. It's still up for another hour and a half if you want to get involved in it before the 8 o'clock kickoffs. Simple question was, has the introduction of B teams put you off attending fixtures in the Checker Trade Trophy? 75% responded and said yes, and then obviously 25% said no. Another poll we ran was, and should B teams be allowed to compete in the Checker Trade Trophy? Only 18% said yes, 82% said no. So there's obviously a clear kind of, how to put it, an opposition against the new format.
When it was first muted and the likes of, you know, Manchester United under 23, Chelsea, Arsenal, all these teams were potentially going to be in it, Liverpool, Tottenham, it kind of gave it at least a bit of a sheen, a little bit of showbiz. But now when you look at it and all those teams aren't in it, and you've got Reading's under-23s,
yeah,
playing Bristol Rovers, Charlton going up against Southampton's under-23s, Peterborough playing Norwich's under-23s, Bolton hosting Everton under-23s, it's, you know, Millwall playing West Brom.
Exactly,
it's,
yeah.
It just really doesn't have good reading. Sheffield United against Leicester.
I think at the time it was 60% voted in favour of the changes to the competition, because I think people weren't interested in kind of the competition as it was before. It was kind of seen as, oh, well, you know, could be a day out at Wembley, but we're not that fussed compared to the FA, the League Cup. So I think it did need a revamp. But since that 60%, I think a few clubs have come out and said, well, if they knew it was going to go this way, they would have voted against the changes. And I think that might well be down to the fact, you know, of the likes of your Man United, your Man Cities, those big names that they use to attract the kind of maybe the proposals to change, saying, oh, you get to play these big clubs, their youth teams, you'll have to play a game. You could play a game at the first team stadium as well. And now, like you said, now we're getting championship teams. It's kind of lost that glamour to it. So I can understand the kind of backlash against the new format.
We've got our roving reporter Tom Feeney. He's over at Valley Parade tonight, so we've been speaking to some fans. We'll hear from them in the football phone up after 7 o'clock. We'll also chat to Tom as well. And Bradford City against Stoke City under 23s tonight, and they said across the board it's going to be possibly a record low turnout.
Yeah, well, you're looking at fixtures like that and you almost, it's an Alan Partridge shrug game, some of these. That's how I'd put it. But I think Stoke City's ticket office tweeted earlier saying they'd sold 82 tickets, something like that, for tonight's game. it shows that there's just not the interest. Home fans are... There's talk of boycotting the games if your team's playing an under-23s team. Fans of the under-23s team, of the Premier League club, you're just not going to be interested. Away on a Tuesday night, would you travel from Stoke to Bradford to watch your under-23s team? Probably not, unless you're a very die-hard fan of that club. And, you know, you can see why there's the backlash, why it's going to be low turnouts. It's just... It is a trial, and it's worth mentioning that this year is a trial for the EFL Trophy, but I think just the way it's going, I'd be very surprised if we're seeing the same format coming next season. And the one thing that kind of got me in terms of saying, well, maybe it shouldn't be on the same level as the other domestic trophies, is if a player gets sent off tonight, it doesn't carry over into league or any other competitions.
Right, so it's not a real competition then.
Yeah, they've said it's a first team competition, but then if you get two yellows and a red, you miss one game, but that's your next Checker Trade Trophy game, not the next league game. So how can you say it's kind of valued? And the fact that we could be seeing penalty shootouts tonight in a group stage game. If it's a draw tonight, it goes to penalties. Why? It's not a cup final. It's not a cup, you know, it's not cup knockout. Why are we doing that in the group stages?
That part of it. That's the only good part.
Yeah, but if you played every game at Wembley, it would take the shine off going to Wembley. Same with penalties; they're exciting.
Yeah, when, how many games are going to get penalties?
A lot, but then it just loses that. Oh, cool, penalty shootout, especially in the group stages. I think you still get a point even if you lose the penalty shootout. Who cares if you lose? Then it's not like you're going to get knocked out of the cup. I just can't see it. I think it's too much change. I can understand a revamp, but they've really gone on the other end of the scale in terms of it. It's just too much. They've messed around with it too much now to a point where you can see why people are saying they're boycotting and not going to the games.
If you are heading to Valley Parade tonight, you will get to see Charlie Adam. He's been named in that Stoke City under-23.
There you go.
Team alongside many United. He's not even the captain.
Does he not?
Didn't get the armband.
Oh, well, that's kind of your glamour one. I'm looking. Matty James, Damari Gray, Marcin Wasilewski, Luis Hernandez, Ben Hamer in goal. There you're. I think you can have five first team players in
the. That's Sheffield United v Leicester.
That's the Leicester City squad. So they've put a few in, but.
You did very well to read that, even though the picture was sideways.
I was reading out with my head to the side, but.
We'll get that. That's not the cameras. We'll get
I forgot there's cameras in here. But yeah, you know, I think it's just that. And you're just looking at the team sheets and you're thinking, why? Why? Mark Munieza, Charlie Adam are Stoke's first team players. You've never heard of the rest of them. It can't work out in the long term. Just can't.
There we go. So I'm not a fan of the Checker Trade Trophy. I kind of like the name.
It's very catchy. It's easier to say than Johnson's
Paint.
They've got
a little jingle, haven't they? They're...
Checkatrade. Checkatrade.com. Yeah. That's, I'll invoice them
but
for that.
But it kind of works with a trophy, doesn't it? It's like Checkatrade trophy. We'll be back in a few moments' time with Good Days, Bad Days.
The FL72 on Radio Yorkshire. Sunday Night Live with Tom Kerwin and Ben Parker.
Wrap up your weekend here on Radio Yorkshire with Sunday Night Live. 2 hours tackling the big issues from the weekend's football, hearing from those that matter and those that don't. I'm looking at you, Tony Pulis. So make a date with us this Sunday night at 6 o'clock. Relax, unwind, and then get wound up.
Let us pray for another Leeds win. It's Sunday Night Live with Tom Kerwin. From the John Smiths to the Keep Mort, the FL72 on Radio Yorkshire.
Still to come tonight, we have your transfer rumours. After 7 o'clock, we're doing the football phone-up. We've got fans of Huddersfield Town, Leeds United, Sheffield Wednesday all on the show as well. And our roving reporter, Tom Feeney, is at Valley Parade. We'll hear from some Bradford fans as well. But right now, it's time for this. Good days, bad days then. Tom, kick us off with good day, bad day in the Championship.
Yeah, new feature on the show. We're going good days, bad days through each league at the weekend. Good day, Burton Albion managed to beat Derby County 1-0. Scoring lots of goals, but they managed to keep it tight in this one. Got a win. So, of course, great start for them. Bad day, Owen Coyle and Blackburn Rovers, they came so close to that first league point, or that another league point, to be denied in the last minute by Tom Carney and Fulham. So bad day for them.
Bad season.
Bad season, yeah.
Bad life for Owen Coyle. In League One, who we got?
League One, good day. Gillingham coming from 2-0 down away at Shrewsbury Town, 1-3-2 to get the 3 points. Not a bad way to win a game. Some entertainment for the travelling fans as well. Bad day, Swindon Town and Bristol Rovers. Game was postponed in the 60th minute, I believe, due to bad weather. Mm. So a bit of a bad day, can't finish the game.
Did you see the pitch?
I didn't actually know, but I have heard about it. It sounds enough to postpone a game, to put it simply.
It was nae good. And in League 2, who we got?
League 2, good day. Doncaster Rovers, convincing 4-1 win over Yeovil, puts them in third place in League 2. Not a bad opening month for them as they look to bounce back straight into League 1 and on the way up. Bad day, Cambridge United, they're yet to win a game. I think they sit bottom of the League 2 table following their 3-0 home defeat to Luton. So bad day. A bit like Blackburn, a bit of a bad season so far for them.
Not a good start to the season for friend of the of Radio Yorkshire, Sean Derry, of course.
Sean Derry, yes.
Ezra, what's going on?
I'm sure we can rely on him to turn it around.
I think he will. Give him time. Thanks very much, Tom. That is Good Days, Bad Days. Brand new feature.
From the John Smiths to the Keep Mort, the FL72 on Radio Yorkshire.
So it means, Tom, that we have a good 5 minutes to talk transfers. You were worried we were going to run out of time because
panicking.
New feature was supposed to start last week, let's be honest.
Yeah, that last week we overran a bit. We
slightly
talked a bit. This has come out today, like now. Oxford are playing.
Is that your breaking news klaxon?
Yeah.
This has come out
today.
Like,
now today, it's come now. Out. Paul Tisdale, the Exeter City manager, is on the bench for Exeter tonight.
Right.
Is that the old, I need some signings, Mr. Chairman? Look, is that like, it's on par with putting two goalkeepers on the bench because you're just saying, I haven't got a squad. He's put himself on the bench. Do you reckon he'll come on? That'd be great if he does.
Maybe he's on a bet that Paul Tisdale will feature.
It's not a squad. Imagine if it's not a squad thing and this is just his opinion on the Checker Trade Trophy where he goes, I'll play. Oh, well. We talk about it then. Of course, I think it probably is a transfer thing a day before the window. But yeah, the manager on the bench, you don't see it enough. You just don't see it enough.
Is he going to be wearing football boots or is he wearing some like snakeskin shoes? Crocodile boots? Because he's a snappy dresser.
Very fashionable. Probably the most fashionable manager in the Football League by far. I think it'd be very difficult for him because you're only allowed 5 subs in this. So if he does need to come on, I think him wearing that kind of... He wears funky hats. I can't think of what they're like. The bowler's hats, is it? He wears them and in a suit. I think if he was called into action, probably not the best attire to have on. So I reckon it's tracksuit for him tonight. Fashionable tracksuit, but tracksuit.
How old is he?
I don't know, you know.
He's 43.
40? Oh, there we go. That's easy enough. I'm sure there was a goalkeeper last year in a different position who was 51-odd on the bench. So not bad. I'm sure he can... get out.
Wayne Brown as well, also on the bench.
Yes.
He's 39, I believe. So he's a bit younger. That's not too bad. That's all right.
That's all right, isn't it? But, yeah, it's an interesting bench tonight. Maybe that's their opinion of the Checker Trade Trophy anyway.
Interesting. See if he gets on playing in the midfield tonight for Exeter. He made one appearance for Exeter, so this will be his second appearance.
If he comes on. Well, who's going to tell him he can't come on?
Boss.
Do what he wants.
He's the boss. A couple of minutes to do your transfer rumours. We potentially are going to overrun now. Kick us off. We've got 4 to get through, starting with Newcastle, as we do pretty much every week.
Every week, of course, we talk about them. Lazar Markovic wanting a loan switch to Newcastle, I think, as opposed to a permanent switch elsewhere. Of course, signed when Brendan Rodgers went on a bit of a spending spree. Not the greatest of players, to be honest. Not really worked out for him at Liverpool, so... Of course, he's looking for that loan switch. I think he's picked loan maybe in the hope that in the long term he might be able to kind of fight for his place back at Liverpool. But yeah, he could well be on the way to Newcastle, who, of course, what, in the last 20 minutes have lost Adam Armstrong to Barnsley.
We've got Chris Martin as well. Wolves knocking on the door of Derby.
Yeah, Wolves apparently going to make a second bid for Derby forward Chris Martin. Of course, Derby strengthening their attack as ever this summer. Chris Martin could be available. I think they've already had one bid turned up down for around £6.5 million. So you'd imagine that second bid's got to be improved if they've got any chance. So Wolves looking to do deals. I think they've got 10 or 11 players in already. By the sounds of it, they're not finished with their transfer dealings.
And Jeff Hendrick as well, potentially leaving Hull City, one of his suitors. Burnley apparently back in the race as well, I'm hearing this afternoon.
Yeah, Jeff Hendrick looks to be on the way out of Derby regardless. Two Premier League clubs after him, but I think Hull City might get it purely just because they need players. They just need players that they can. They've left it very late, but at least they're doing deals. So yeah, Jeff Hendrick looks to be on the way out of Derby.
Yeah, a good signing. I think he'll be able to step up into the Premier League.
Yeah, I think he's quite underrated when you compare to the other Championship strikers. We talk about how much they're worth, etc., etc. But Jeff Hendrick's been there. He's proven he can do it at this level. He had a very decent Euros as well, I think. So well worth taking a chance on compared to, we're talking about Kadir going for 15 million. If you can get, you know, Jeff Hendrick for a bit less in the Premier League, if he does a job at keeping you up, particularly for Hull City, it's going to be money well spent.
Indeed, we shall see. Going to be a very busy end to the transfer window across the Premier League and Football League as well. Will Hull City get their man or men? They need many, many players. That's pretty much it for us on the 72. We're going to be back after the news at 7 o'clock with the football phone. We've got fans from Huddersfield Town, Leeds United, Sheffield Wednesday as well, and our roving reporter, Tom Feeney, is out and about at Valley Parade. He's going to be chatting to some Bradford fans, and we'll get him on for a bit of a chat as well. But next, we have the news at 7 o'clock with Jack Deaton.